Now, this is extraordinary. Tactically, the Crusaders have absolutely put the Byzantines off balance. The whole of the Golden Horn is exposed to attack. The Venetians could attack along those weaker walls. The northeastern corner of the city is actually some of the most vulnerable parts of the city. This will be proved again in the Great Siege of 1453 when the Ottomans take the city. And so immediately the Crusaders are there with this exiled prince and proceed to attack the city. The Venetians, even though they're usually portrayed in the literature as being nothing more than, scheming Italian merchants, the Venetians, if at either accounts, either of Robert of Clari, who represents the rank and file, or of Villehardouin, indicate that they were just as courageous and bold as the Crusader knights. And in mid-July, July 1617, there's a major attack launched on the city. The Venetians seize a large stretch of the walls along the Golden Horn, and I think they occupied 30 towers. I've walked that section several times to find out where they attacked, and they did. They carried the area. The Crusaders are attacking the Blachernae area. The Byzantines rally. The Varangians attack the Venetians. The Venetians actually have to pull off the walls. And what they do is they set fire to parts of the city, and this results in a great fire that ravages much of the northern sections of the city, and it's the first of three fires that ravaged the city during the siege, and a good deal of Constantinople is reduced to ashes as a result of the siege of 1203-1204. The Crusaders pull back. However, Alexis III panics. That night, he escapes. He takes his favorite concubine, lots of money. He leaves his wife behind. After all, this is a depraved Byzantine emperor. He does have his priorities straight, at least for himself, and flees out to one of the cities on the shores of Bulgaria. And the next morning, the Crusaders have found that they were repulsed, but there's no emperor in Constantinople, and their immediate reaction, well, we've won. The imperial court aristocracy is very clever here. They take and put on the throne Isaac II, the brother of the emperor who just fled, and the father of the exiled prince who's in the Crusader camp. Now, Isaac is probably one of the most pathetic creatures ever to rule. He had been blinded by his brother, which should have kept him off the throne. There'd never been a mutilated emperor on the throne before, but he was alive, he was available, and the imperial court said, this is a great way to counter the Crusaders. Isaac, at this point, was really quite mad. I mean, you know, he'd been interested in astrology, and he got even more and more weird. He's advanced in years. He's blind. He consults astrologers with all sorts of potions, how to increase his sexual potency, how he's going to live forever. I mean, the guy is totally delusional and out of it. But it doesn't matter. He's emperor. And he's an emperor who'd been chosen by the court aristocracy, and there's immediately an invitation to the prince, come and join Dad. The Crusaders at first are extremely happy about this. Alexis joins his father, and immediately the bill is presented. That is what had been promised back at Zara. And Alexis IV is in the imperial palace, and immediately, 200,000 marks of cologne. That was the agreed price. That's what's going to be done. They're going to pick up the debt. Well, the money involved is running up to 3 or 4 million gold pieces of hyperperia. I mean, this is like four times the annual income of the imperial government. Everyone knew no one could deliver on this, and they understood immediately that the foolish prince had just promised to store away. And at that point, relations begin to deteriorate. Alexis IV tries to appease his allies. He spends a great deal of time in the Crusader camp. He takes them on excursion into the European hinterland, beat up some rivals, to attack some Bulgarians. It's a good way to keep Crusader knights occupied. But he's being pressed by Baldwin, by Boniface, by Enrico, the Doge of Venice, to start providing the supplies and money. And part of it is because the membership is becoming extremely impatient. It's late summer 1203. Most of them realize that the sailing season is almost over, and they're eager to get to Palestine. And they want their money, they want their provisions. And Alexis can't deliver it. Furthermore, most of the imperial aristocracy take the long-practiced diplomatic weapon since 1180, which is to do nothing. That's always the safest. And it's typical when you get into these debates. I'm sure the argument was put forward, let's keep our options open. That is, let's not do A, let's not do B, let's do nothing. And what the imperial aristocracy didn't realize is they just chose C, which is the worst possible of conclusions. That is, events take their own course. So the government stalled. Isaac II becomes increasingly delusional. And as the winter approaches, the Western Europeans are becoming extremely impatient. Crescent. There's another fire. There's a riot against the Latins who were chased out of the city in early 1204. And so the situation begins to deteriorate very quickly.